The message today is entitled Misassessment of Embodiment. So, this Wednesday night at 7 p.m., we will be viewing a documentary entitled Same God. And some of you may have already watched it on PBS. For those of you who haven't watched it or haven't heard the story behind it that I've shared over the last few Sundays, let me just share with you a really brief overview of it. When I was first aware of this story, it was because of the headlines that it made in the year 2016. But the first time that it really hit home with me was when I heard the person at the center of the story, Dr. Larissa Hawkins. I heard her being interviewed by Barbara Baron Taylor at the Wild Goose Festival last year. The film follows Dr. Hawkins, who was a political science professor at Wheaton. And she will tell you that's how you say it. It's not Wheaton, it's Wheaton. It's the way they say it there. Wheaton. So, it's a conservative Christian college. Dr. Hawkins was effectively dismissed from her tenured position there after asserting in a Facebook post in December of 2015 that Christians and Muslims serve the same God. Now, it's important to know that she was clear on that post that she was echoing none other than the Pope in saying that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. Now, the post also had a photo of Hawkins wearing a hijab, which she committed to wearing throughout the season of Advent, in a show of sort of embodied select solidarity with Muslim women. And the post it went viral. Well, according to the powers that be at Wheaton, it was Hawkins' comment in which she quoted Pope, and not the fact that she was wearing a hijab, that ultimately led to her departure from the college. The Facebook post in part said, "I stand in religious solidarity with Muslims because they, like me a Christian, are people of the book. And as Pope Francis stated last week, we worship the same God." Now, reflecting on her experience, Dr. Hawkins says that the experience taught her that, quote, "If you haven't been exiled for seeking to liberate, then you are not trying hard enough. Amen. And you need to do some soul work about why it is that you haven't been exiled from some community." While I have actually been exiled by a community for doing what I thought was right, for standing with the least, the last, and the left out, that's still a hard judgment to hear. If you haven't been exiled for seeking to liberate, then you're not trying hard enough. Well, when I first heard it, I couldn't help but think. Now, this seems like a very specific measure. I'm not sure that it's realistic to think that every situation of embodied solidarity can be measured that way. I mean, not all acts of embodied oneness, embodied solidarity, are big acts that might result in exiling you from a community. After some thought, however, I realized that not all communities are formal. The reality is we all have communities we purposefully join, like church or a social group, but we also have informal communities in which we exist just because of who we are. It can be based on age, race, sexual orientation, any number of things which define us, but we frequently are understood to be members of communities even though we did not choose them. That is certainly true of living a life of privilege. That there are all kinds of informal communities we get to be in, sort of by default, when we are in a place of privilege in life. Things like access to certain kinds of education, having a positive relationship with law enforcement, having your people's history be the dominant history that is taught, being overrepresented in anything that is good and underrepresented in things like arrest and jail time, having your particular sexual orientation considered normal, being a part of a religion that is presumed more correct and more blessed by God than all the others. And the list could go on and on. They are all sort of informal groups that those of us who have privilege belong to, frequently by default. Folks who study those things call this ordinary privilege. And they remind us that they contain an opportunity. You see, research has confirmed over and over again that those with ordinary privilege have the power to speak up on behalf of the least, the last, and the left out. And not only that, they tend to have a particularly effective influence when they do. For so many of us, looking for an opportunity to resist bigotry and bias in society, we must realize that our ordinary privilege, if leveraged properly, can contain an extraordinary power. In thinking about Dr. Hawkins' statement that if you haven't been exiled, you're seeking to liberate and you're not trying hard enough. I also realize that not all exiles are imposed by other people. Sometimes being exiled is part of the sacrifice we plan for ourselves. And this is particularly true of all the informal groups to which we belong. At times, when we make a choice to take a stand with the least, the last, and the left out, we are also making a choice to be identified as other by some of the very people with whom we have shared privilege. And that can go hand in hand with being exiled from the informal group our privilege has given us. So, you haven't been exiled or seeking to liberate, and you're not trying hard. I have to say, after a bit of all, I do agree. It is all a bit counterintuitive to a degree, isn't it? I mean, it's your privilege that allows you to take a stand with those with less access to privilege. And in a way, doing that may give way to issues that will cause you to have less privilege. But in doing so, we have to realize that in losing that privilege, we're also losing the very leverage that we were using. Now, Dr. Hawkins is now a professor at Virginia University, but she's no longer on the tenure track because, as she says, quote, those are the consequences. That is, the consequences of her act of embodied solidarity. Act stepping out of a place of privilege and then using it to elevate the story of people who are suffering. She says that her life has taken a dramatic shift because of her actions. She says, quote, I've lost everything. I've lost tenure. I've lost my students whom I loved. I've lost friends, and I've had to move from Chicago to Virginia to a place that Thomas Jefferson built on the backs of my ancestors. So now I get to deal with that. I'm going to say stuff. That's not exactly the word she used. Now I get to deal with that stuff every day. And asks if she considered the consequences to it again. She replied, I will do it again and again and again. Her perspective tells me that while embodied solidarity, embodied oneness can mean risk, can mean cost, can mean loss. Cost is worth it. But we only think that the cost is not worth it when we allow ourselves to believe that the value of what we might lose is higher than the value of human life, higher than the value of equality, higher than the value of basic human dignity. There's a Chinese saying that goes like this. It says, if you want happiness for an hour, take a nap. If you want happiness for a day, go fishing. If you want happiness for a year, inherit a fortune. If you want happiness for a lifetime, help somebody. The reality is, many of our greatest thinkers have come to the same conclusion. True happiness is found in helping others. Or as Tolstoy, I always want to put a story in there, Tolstoy. As he put it, the sole meaning of life is to serve humanity. And even science backs up this reality that helping others makes us happy. As a matter of fact, we now know that helping others activates the same pleasure regions in the brain that eating and sex does. It turns out that helping others just may be the secret to living a life that is not only happier, but also healthier and wealthier, more productive and meaningful. And that's where the risk assessment comes in. As Dr. Hawkins says, if you haven't been exiled or seeking to liberate, then you're not trying hard enough. We all have some form, some level of privilege. We do. And it is simply a reality that if we use that privilege to embody solidarity, to embody oneness, to stand with the least, the last, and the left out, we may very well be risking our ability to hold on to that privilege. Depending on the kind of stand we are taking, we could be even risking our very lives. Just think of the cost of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that he paid for embodying oneness. In the end, it is a decision that each of us has to make individually. And there is no right or wrong answer. There is no right or wrong answer. But it is important. It is important to be realistic with ourselves about our decisions. What price are we willing to risk to stand with others? Is there a cost too high? Is the value of what we might lose higher than the value of human life, higher than the value of equality, higher than the value of basic human dignity? Is what we might gain, like a world where fewer people suffer, a place of heightened happiness, worth what we might lose, the price that we might pay? There truly is no simple answer here. But this kind of risk assessment is essential. It's essential in freeing us to do what we can to make this world a better place, to stand in oneness together, to embody solidarity with people like Dr. Hawkins. So I hope that you will join us this Wednesday night at 7 p.m. as we hear even more about her story. I'll just conclude with Dr. Hawkins' challenge to us at the Wild Goose Festival last year. When she was asked what she wanted people to take away from her story, she simply said, set dangerous intentions, pray dangerous prayers, and never make peace with oppression.